Merci beaucoup Delphine pour l'invitation. Et donc je vais parler de système hotspot en Grèce, en Italie. Et ça, ça fait partie de ma recherche, de recherche ethnographique que j'ai fait en 2015, en 2016 en Grèce et en Italie du Sud. Et l'hypothèse de recherche, c'est que plutôt que garder aux hotspots comme des prisons, il faut élargir la perspective au niveau de ce que j'appelle containment beyond detention. So now I switch to English. And the presentation concerns a hotspot conceived as flexible choke points of mobility disruption. So this is the way in which I define hotspot, and looks at the form of containment beyond detention that the hotspot approach has generated. Containment beyond detention refers to border tactics of mobility disruption, diversion and deceleration, which take place also beyond detention measures and detention defenses of detention centers. This involves situating hotspots within the broader spatial processes and economies that characterize the government of mobility and refuse to hinge the analysis simply on hotspot presenting this latter as carceral spaces. So there is also an engagement in this article that I recently written with my friend Glenda Garelli, with the carceral geography literature and with the island studies literature, challenging many of their theoretical assumptions. So by arguing that in order to understand the effects of containment, we cannot focus the attention exclusively on the measure of detention and on these spaces as fixed spaces of blockage and detentive practices. So I start with a vignette from the border zone of Ventimiglia. So Ventimiglia, at the Italian-French border, as you know, is the closest Italian cities to the French-Italian borders. August 10, 2016, 400 migrants are forcefully removed from the hosting center run by the Red Cross in Ventimiglia to the hotspot of Taranto in southern Italy. Other forced transfers to the Taranto hotspot took place from Como, the Italian city located at the border with Switzerland, where between summer and autumn 2016, migrants ended up blocked due to the closure of the Swiss border and to operation of pushback to Italy carried out by Swiss authorities. Hotspot facilities have partly changed their function. This is the reason why I wanted to show this image of migrants taken by force from Ventimiglia to Taranto, presented in the European Migration Agenda as frontline infrastructures for the full and quick identification of incoming migrants through enhanced mechanism of intra-governmental control. Italian hotspots have recently also been used for redistributing migrants already present on the national territory, and particularly for removing their unruly mobility and unruly presence from this highly visible zone. This new evolution of the hotspot complicate the territoriality and sovereignty of hotspot and call for investigating their actually existing geographies beyond the governmental vision of EU institutions and the accounts of the governmental actors involved in their implementation and management. So, in a nutshell, I'm interested here in investigating heterogeneous forms of containment that are not visible from within sites of detention and that are not limited to detentive and repressive strategies. And I'm also interested in looking at various forms of entrapment, legal, existential and spatial entrapment, that result from mobility control and channeling mechanisms like the hotspot. So I will start by saying that this idea of containment beyond detention starts from the assumption that containment refers more broadly to practices and measures enforced by state and non-state actors with the purpose of diverting and decelerating mobility, but not necessarily of stopping mobility. And this is connected to a work that I'm currently doing on mobility as a technology of government. So when migrants are moved by force, not necessarily through official expulsions, deportation, but also through internal force transfer or by inducing migrants to move because they are evicted from some border zone. So let's start from Lampedusa Island, the southernmost tip of Europe, the first hotspot to be opened in September 2015, with the idea that it would work as a model for all other hotspots. So, and as you know, there are at the moment 4 hotspots in Italy, and there are hotspots on the Greek island of Lesbos, Leros, Kos, Samos, and Chios. The first year of the Lampedusa hotspot was a time of experimentation with the flexible structure and multiple mandates of the hotspot. The Lampedusa hotspot is located in a hollow in the central part of the Lampedusa island on military premises in the Contrada Imbriacola facilities that has served several functions over the years, from first aid center to hosting center, now hotspot. Upon disembarkation in the small harbour of Lampedusa, migrants are moved to the hotspot where the Italian police and Frontex officials perform those identification procedures that are the defining features of the hotspot, since hotspots are presented precisely as heightened mechanism of border surveillance and technologies for filtering mixed flows at entry. So more than technology to enhance securities, however, identification procedure performed in Lampedusa a preventative illegalization strategies and often result in form of punitive entrapment for some migrants on the island. So first, the preventative illegalization via screening procedures. As part of the Lampedusa hotspot procedure at its outset, all incoming migrants received an Italian Home Office questionnaire, so a paper, bearing the question, what is the reason for your being in Italy? With 4 options to choose from, poverty, family reunification, work, or other reason. War and persecution until March 2016, so this is important. Since March 2016, this has changed, and because of many denunciation and protests made by NGOs and activists and even few politicians, there is now the possibility for migrants to tick the box asylum. But until March 2016, so for the first 6 months after the official opening of the hotspot, war and persecution were not explicitly listed options and have to fall under the rubric other. Police officials often fill in the document for migrants, ticking the box that would decide their destiny, either protected refugees versus destitute and undocumented economic migrants, simply based on migrants' country of birth, and only allowing Eritreans, Syrians, and Iraqis, those eligible for the EU relocation programs, to start the asylum procedures. All the others, including large numbers of people coming from West Africa countries, were instead legalized on the spot. They were excluded from protection mechanisms and classified as undocumented economic migrants. And now there are so-called North African migrants who are still excluded from the process. So there is still this exclusionary criteria at stake. What happened to these illegalized people during the first months of operation of the hotspot, so those who have been denied of the very possibility to claim asylum? They were officially asked to leave the country within 7 days through an expulsion order called 7-day decrees and asked to leave the national territories from the frontier of Rome, Fiumicino Airport, and practically pay for their own removal. So actually, this obviously didn't happen, so what this mechanism has produced is a multiplication of illegalized asylum seekers, of rejected asylum seekers, that we are seeing now even in France and in other countries. So there is this increased rate of rejected asylum seekers, of illegalized migrants. Thus, the hotspot mechanism produces a large population of illegalized people on the national territory and their destitute presence in Italy or across Europe. And here I think is important also to stress what I call in some other articles I wrote, the accelerated temporality of control. So there is this tendency that is particularly glaring in the new law that has been enforced in Italy a few weeks ago, Legge Minniti, so-called, that establish the need to accelerate the times and the steps for of the asylum procedure, denying also the possibility for the migrants to appeal against a negative decision about their asylum claim. And there is this pressure on fastening the asylum procedure that, however, doesn't mean that migrants are less entrapped and stranded on the Italian territory. On the contrary, there is this speeding up of legal procedure against and not in opposition, but coexisting with an indefinite strandedness and an existential conundrums of the migrants who remain illegally on the territory, or who actually sometimes also if on the on the paper their procedure should be fastened process, actually they wait indefinitely up to 1 year and a half. But this accelerated temporality of control is also what characterize so not only the Italian law but also the European definition of the hotspot, so to quickly partition the migrants. The Lampedusa hotspot has also been performing a sort of punitive entrapment of migrants on the island for those who refuse to be fingerprinted, knowing that this procedure would imply relinquishing the freedom to decide where to claim asylum in Europe. While this refusal jams the swift screening system of the hotspot frontline, the special outcome onto migrant lives is that those who refuse to be fingerprinted ended up stuck on the island and trapped there for non-compliance with the hotspot regulation. So on the one hand, there is this accelerated temporality, but on the other, since migrants, and to the, as long as migrants refuse, they remain blocked. For instance, a group of 250 migrants, mainly Eritreans, who arrived at Lampedusa on the 5th of November 2015, refused to be fingerprinted and organized a protest on the 17th of December of the same year, claiming their rights to choose where to seek asylum in Europe. As the protest clearly showed, migrants who resist fingerprinting procedure at the Lampedusa hotspot are caught in a special trap. They don't have access to the protection system and are indefinitely detained on Lampedusa, far away not only from their aspire to refuge, but also from the mainland. 10 of the 250 migrants who refused to be fingerprinted were still on Lampedusa when I went there for the second time after 3 months since their arrival, while the others were transferred to Sicily, to Agrigento, having finally given their fingerprints out of extortion. So they have been basically fingerprinted by force also with the use of electricity. And just a parenthesis, I met by chance these migrants here in Marseille 1 month later, and these migrants had these signs of torture on their bodies. This is something that has been that is also included in the recent report by Amnesty International about the tortures made by the Italian police on migrants. And however, coming from the UK, at least academically, I want to. There is also this strong denunciation now going on against Italy, but in this case, it's also important to stress that without justifying at all the violence made by the Italian police, but at the same time, there has been a radical shift in the police procedures, Italian police procedures, because Italy is like Greece, so these two countries are under pressure about for complying to with the international, with the, sorry, the European standards. And I will come back at the very end of the presentation about this migrant refusal to give the fingerprints, but also migrant refusal to accept the criteria of the relocation, because the two things are related. And in fact, many of these migrants, for instance, this group of migrants who refused to give the fingerprints were Eritreans. So in principle, they were eligible for the relocation. So now I want to focus briefly on Greece. So the status of Lesbos Island radically changed since the inception of the hotspot and during its first year of operation. Given its proximity to the Turkish coastline, Lesbos was a landing place for people trying crossing the Mediterranean into Europe. This function persisted also during the first months of operation of the Lesbos hotspot, called Moria, when migrants were processed there at differential speed, depending on their nationalities, and generally let go to the Greek mainland. This transit point, a function of the Lesbos hotspot, has now ended, and Lesbos has become a hotspot island with an explicit containment and border enforcement function. The transformation in the force and mechanism of capture that directly affect migrant lives in Lesbos is one of the main and most visible outcomes of the EU-Turkey agreement and of the EU effort to stop migrant movements across the Mediterranean Sea. The Moria hotspot in Lesbos opened in October 2015, so soon after the first Italian hotspot. For the first 5 months of operation of the Moria hotspot, identification procedures were a preliminary step that would grant migrants a permit to legally reside in Greece for either 6 months for the Syrian nationals only, or for 1 month for all other migrant nationals. This authorization to temporarily stay in Greece would allow them to get a ferry ticket to Athens and hence move on with their journey to European countries along the Balkan corridors. During this initial time period, migrant fingerprints taken inside the Moria hotspot were not transmitted to the Eurodac database. Yet, a differential treatment targeting Tunisians, Algerians and Moroccans only was put into place already in November 2015. Labeled as North African migrants by Greek authorities, these migrants were subjected to immediate detention. After the instant and blur category of North Africans, Pakistani migrants were the second group excluded from free transit to the mainland and from the channels of the asylum with a decision that dates back to the beginning of 2016. Pakistani migrants usually refuse to claim asylum since they are aware that they are likely to be rejected and that asking for international protection corresponds to a form of humanitarian containment. However, due to the lack of detention capacity in Lesbos, most of them were not identified by the Greek police, and at the same time, a first spatial hierarchization was established between those migrants that UNHCR consider vulnerable subjects that are sent to the Karatepe camp, a camp which is close to Moria, where they can go in and out during the day, living in containers, and all other migrants who had to stay inside the hotspot of Moria. Vulnerability and nationality cannot, in fact, be fully disentangled from one another. So the most of the people I met in Karatepe were Syrians, apart from five or six Palestinians. It can be Syrian families. It can be argued that the former is always inflected by the latter, so vulnerability and nationalities, and change according to the geographical and political context. The transformation of Lesbos from a dock and go site to a space of differential containment is the outcome of two fundamental political restructuring operations that occur in the span of just a few months from November 2016 to March 2016. The first one is what I call the trickle-down effect produced by the progressive border closure, as we know, along the Balkan route, starting from the north, Slovenia, and moving on southward to Macedonia. So in November 2015, on the 19th of November, Macedonian authorities established an exclusionary criterion for accessing the country based on nationality. Only migrants coming from Iraq, Syria, and Afghanistan could enter Macedonia. This exclusionary border access was followed by Slovenian border closure in early March 2016, which triggered north-to-south border restrictions, so from Slovenia to Croatia to Serbia, and then ended up in the final closure of the Domani border, so between Greece and Macedonia. The second one, as already mentioned, consists in the implementation of the EU-Turkey deal signed on March 18 of 2016. However, so this can give an image of Lesbos as a prison island. But I think that far from being sealed space or zone of total detention, all the governmental spaces for identifying, containing and selecting migrants, including hotspots, are actually crisscrossed by multiple movements and formed by differential circuits and channels of mobility. For instance, migrants are differently managed on the island depending on their nationalities as I mentioned above. Moreover, as some were allowed to leave the island relatively quickly, for instance, to some migrants are sent to Athens, where they can wait in order to their response of their asylum claim. Others remain blocked there for months. So there are migrants now in Lesbos who are still there since the first time I went there, so in April 2015. So migrants who have remained blocked on the island 1 year. The hotspot, in fact, is not a monolithic space simply established for enclosing mobility. The hotspot system works by multiplying migration profiles and differentiating migrants' juridical patterns through process of individualization and finally dividing up migrant groups. So hotspots are procedure for channeling mobility and for differentiating migrant multiplicities more than detaining them as an indistinct group. In this reorganization of the space of Lesbos, it was not only the temporality of control of the hotspot that was reshuffled. So this, the fact that from a space of transit, mobility was more and more controlled in Moria, although with this differential and hierarchical way of regulating migration. Together with that, the number of channels, steps, and categories for regaining control over migrants' mobility also multiplied. The logistic of the hotspot system in Greece is in fact sustained by the multiplication of temporal borders as a series of deadlines that migrants need to comply with in order to be able to claim asylum. So I don't spend time here, but there were strict deadlines last summer for them in order to be able to fit within certain categories, and also in order to claim for the relocation, to access the relocation, and time lapses that ultimately function as measure for further restricting the access to relocation procedure. Algerians, Morocco, Tunisian, and later on also Pakistanis became targets for arrest and were prevented from leaving the island, even after they obtained the one-month temporary permit. Few people were actually apprehended, and the legalization of Pakistani migrants was managed rather through a different type of twofold trap. First, the trap of asylum, and secondly, the special trap. That is, those who decided to go to the hotspot to register and to be identified in order to become eligible to claim asylum were immediately detained inside the facility. In this respect, the center started to operate as a closed facility for Pakistanis only. Migrants from other nationalities were de facto trapped there due to the geographical boundaries of the island and the denial of the special permit needed to travel to Athens by ferry. From a space of transit, the Hellenic Peninsula has become a site of containment where migrants are partitioned and divided. Similarly to Lesbos, many transit zones in Greece, like for instance the Terminal 1 of Piraeusport that now has been evicted, were transformed into space of control, identification, and indefinite way for migrants in the span of few months. So from space of transit to space of control. And I was there precisely when this transformation was going on, so last summer. Unlike Lampedusa, where the management of migrants' landing is quite centralized and migrants are taken always to the same port, in Lesbos, the establishment of the hotspot and the change that occurred after its opening had a considerable impact on the spatial economy and geographies of migrant arrivals. Yet the redefinition of the geographies of migrant sea journeys to Lesbos cannot be entirely grasped if we narrow the focus to the Greek shores. That is to say, the spatial economies of migration connected to the hotspot should be analyzed together with the strategy of mobility containment put into place as a result of the EU-Turkey deal, and that had been enacted primarily by the Turkish Coast Guard. The number of migrants arrival in Lesbos, for instance, dropped from 1,400 to 70 per day in the span of a few weeks in March 2016. In turn, this produced transformation in the geographies and economy of migrant crossing. So due to the constant patrolling of the Turkish Coast Guard, migrants tended to arrive in the southern part of the island and no longer in the northern one, that was the closest to the Turkish shore, but even the most controlled one. simultaneously, because of the increased difficulty for migrants to reach Lesbos without being pushed back, the economy of crossing has been readapted by smugglers to the changed situation. As the volunteers from the Spanish rescue organization Proactiva told me, smugglers in Turkey now sell a sort of three attempts ticket for $1,000 that can be used three times by the same migrants to go to Lesbos, given the high percentage of possibility to be intercepted at sea and returned to Turkey. So now I want to conclude with a section on what I call from moving the attention from the hotspot as enclosed sites to a geography of channels. Conceived as a site of mobility disruption, the hotspot represent a complex set of infrastructures, identification procedure, logistical nodes for managing migrants landing that has been put into place for slowing down and retaking control over migration movement. Yet, if we look at this system through the lexicon of the channels, so the channel is and a very important spatial metaphor in the language of humanitarian actors, if you think about UNHCR or the humanitarian corridor, and there is also this debate between corridor and channels, but still there is a, the two are both used by humanitarian actors and by authorities, it can be argued that its bottleneck function should be seen not as a carceral space, but as a slowing down exclusionary filter from where institutional channels depart. So these channels I'm talking about are those opened up by the relocation scheme launched in the European Migration Agenda in simultaneity with the hotspot approach. So the two cannot be analyzed separately, right? By using the terminology of channels, entails bringing attention to the speciality that grow out of migration governmentality and the mechanism through which migrants are moved. So not only through which migrants move, but are moved. And this is something that has been stressed in the literature, for instance, by Xiang Biao, an anthropologist who is working on how to rethink migration through logistics and focusing on this, the fact that migrants are not only moved, but are moved, and we need to bring more attention to this aspect. So to the material logistic and to the legal procedure through which states manage to regain control over migration movements and to transfer there. This is the perspective I engage in here, studying the logistical infrastructure that is in place inside and also around the hotspot, together with the institutional channel for refugees relocation instituted by the EU as a hotspot twin measure, so relocation and hotspot. By speaking of channels, I point to an overlooked aspect in analysis of the logistics. So there is a growing literature now on migration and logistics. But I think that this literature in part failed to account for the exclusionary nature, as you also mentioned, of channels. So channels do not only hold mobility, do not only allow mobility, they do not simply enable mobility to happen in a material sense. Channels also steer and contain movements. So this is for instance, if you think about Deborah Cowan, and there are many critical geographers currently working on logistics, they tend to produce this image of a very functionalist global mobility of trade and people. To put it more directly, channels regulate the containment and acceleration of flows. They do not simply serve as the material infrastructure of circulation. In this regard, it is important to remember that hotspots have been officially presented by the European Union as a mechanism for sharing the burden of the refugees across Europe by moving many of them in a regulated and legal way from the places of first arrival to the other member states. In reality, as we know, the slowness of the relocation process and the reluctance on the part of many EU countries to take asylum seekers from Italy and Greece, together with the closure of the Balkan corridor, have amplified the role of Greece and Italy as space frontiers of mobility containment, outspots where migrants are blocked at the European front line and circulation across the European space is contained. So it is important to mention that not only other member states refuse to take migrants, but that also migrants frequently refuse to enter the relocation procedure. This is something that was for me particularly visible when I did interviews in Greece last summer. even as they were considered eligible for it by U.S. institutions, so also those migrant nationals who can access the relocation scheme. Indeed, what the European Union promoted as a kind of safe route towards northern European countries for migrants made blatant the impossibility for them to choose where to go and claim asylum. In other words, the safety of the exclusionary channel of relocation has represented the material obstruction of migrant claims' right of choice. Protection appeared to some migrants as a synonym of capture, that result in being moved and being channeled by state policy. So at the European Asylum Support Office headquarters in Athens, an officer I interviewed revealed to me that so when the relocation started, it had been presented to migrants as a way for them to continue their journey safely. Yet, the majority of the migrants prefer to do that in an autonomous way, so they refuse the relocation. Only after realizing that they were stranded in Greece because of the EU-Turkey deal, with no alternatives, and because of the closure of the Balkan routes, Syrians opted in mass for the relocation. So this is, for me, an important point, because I think that, and it's a point that I'm developing in a common paper with Glenda Garelli and Nicolas De Genova, about this connection and that remain under-theorized in the political debate and also in the literature between asylum and freedom. So the fact that it seems to me that the current political challenge in rethinking the asylum is precisely in accounting for this this claim of right to choose where to go and where to claim asylum that migrants themselves are raising. So the fact that asylum seekers are precisely also those people who do not accept to be transferred from one country to another one. And so I'm asking what are, for us, the theoretical and political challenges of rethinking these two terms together without dismissing this aspect and by saying, especially in a moment of crisis, if you can obtain even temporary protection, you should not complain, right? So recently at the European Commission, this migrant refusal of the relocation has been presented as a scandal, right? So migrant refusing to be channeled in the relocation procedure. So this is the main point that for me stems from this analysis and ethnography of the hotspots. So starting from what is not established by the EU documents and is not established even by humanitarian actors who try to find solutions, legal solution or make policy recommendations. So as also Antonio said before, these humanitarian corridors are for sure a good experiment. At the same time, there is this unbearable claim that migrants not only raise and make, but really enact, refusing being fingerprinted and refusing to be part of the relocation system. And just last conclusion, so just to summarize my point, instead of narrowing the analysis to the institutional spaces of migration governmentality defined by states, we need to move beyond the fences of the hotspot and map the specialities and the forms of containment beyond detention that are connected to the establishment of the US hotspot approach to the migration crisis.